this didn't feel like much of a community when we moved in, and now everybody says, oh, this is such a great place to live.
Welcome to Life Without Us, a podcast that shares stories about community and connection to inspire more of us to have more us in our lives. I'm Valerie Navarrete, a strategist, facilitator, and community builder who believes deeply that we need to recenter interdependence in order to thrive. On today's episode, we're talking to one of the co-founders of a co-housing project that has been building community and connection in Old Ottawa East for more than 25 years. Joining me today to talk about his experience is Steve Fick. Originally from Colorado, Steve met his future wife, Signe Fridrickson, after making his way to British Columbia, Canada to pursue a master's degree. The couple and their young children moved to Ottawa when Steve became the chief cartographer at Canadian Geographic magazine. His work with the magazine won many national and international awards. Steve currently works as a cartographer and designer for Inuit Heritage Trust, making regional maps of Nunavut showing the traditional Inuktitut names gathered by interviewing elders and hunters. Steve has maintained a parallel career as a painter and art teacher. He has an extensive history of solo and group shows and has had his artwork published in a variety of books and magazines. He has also composed and performed music and often collaborates with his wife, Signe, in her practice as a registered psychotherapist. He and Signe have now lived in Ottawa over 33 years, and their children have grown into wonderful, intelligent, creative, principled young adults. Steve has two grandchildren who live just around the corner from him. Steve is not very active on social media, but you can find him and his artwork on Facebook at Steve Fick Fine Art. Steve, welcome to Life Without Us. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
To get us started, Steve, I'd love it if you could take us back to Terra Firma Co-Housing's founding, which I understand is more than 25 years ago. What was it that made you and your family choose to get involved in founding the community?
So we moved in 25 years ago, but we were actually a organizing group for 5 years before that. So it's been like 30 years that we've been involved. And why was I interested when I met someone at a dance party and said, hey, there's this group forming? It's a number of things. I grew up in a large family. When I was a student, both undergrad and grad, I lived in shared student houses, and I just got used to that cooperative type of living. I also was a volunteer in a very small, with Peace Corps. I was still an American at that point, with Peace Corps in a small village, isolated village in Thailand. So I really got to see how a traditional village functions, and that's been one description of co-housing. They say it's bringing the village into the modern city, if you're in a city. Not all of them are, of course. And we had been living in a small village outside of Ottawa, and we had a really hard time finding community there. We were a young family in the middle of the older part of town, and it just felt like, you know, if you hadn't lived in that village for a generation or two, you just weren't part of the social fabric, at least the part of the village where we were. So we were feeling quite isolated.
It's interesting. You talk about wanting to be in a village, but then you had to leave a village to find your own village in the city.
That's right. And we had to leave a village out in the country to find nature, because in that little village, you know, there were good places to walk. Mm. You know, it was just sort of farm fields and streets. And whereas here in Ottawa, there's just so many places. I bike to Herdman Park, which is on the east side of the Rideau River, in the mornings. And it's a big, wild area with mature trees and tons of birds. So, yeah.
Yeah, you found what you're looking for, it sounds like.
For sure.
Can you describe Terra Firma a bit for us? What kind of units are there? Who lives there with you?
Sure. So this was, when we bought it, it was originally 2 3-door rows. And they were quite old. They were built in the 1880s. And they were never very fancy places. You know, we discovered that when some of us gutted to remodel, and you could see that, nope, these places were never very fancy. In fact, one of the elder neighbors here, when she heard we'd moved in, she said, "Oh, you're living in the tenements." So they were workers' homes, you know, that this was a working class neighborhood. Although now it's been gentrified for sure. But so we bought the 2 3-door rows. For a fairly long period, we co-owned the units until we eventually became a condominium. You know, most of the people who moved in had been involved through this fairly long period of being an organizing group. So we had already formed communal bonds through that process. One couple was actually on sabbatical, and they were traveling through the States. They were down in Colorado, and they bought sight unseen. So, you know, there was a lot of faith and trust in each other and in the concept. So now the condominium has 7 units, because we combined those 2 buildings. We built another residential unit, reconfigured a unit, and built our common space. And we combined, you know, these 6 small inner city backyards into one. It's a really lovely backyard. Now people come back and say, "Oh, geez, this is like an oasis, or this is like paradise," you know. So, we each own our own unit. You know, we're not a commune. We're not like living in each other's homes. We have our own homes. You know, it's a nice blend of privacy and community. And traditionally we've shared 2 meals a week, except in the summer. When people are on the move, and like a Sunday and Wednesday nights, and we households take turns cooking for each other. So that means every week we get chances to check in with each other. And there's lots and lots of opportunities for informal sharing. You know, we don't need 6 lawnmowers. We only need 1 lawnmower. You sort of learn who has that, you know, special tool and where to go borrow stuff, or just getting advice. And in terms of our common space, in the winter time, we'll have our shared meals there. We don't cook there because we're a small enough group that we can cook in our own kitchens, which is an advantage. So we'll have meals, but you know, it's a place where we can get together and have larger parties. Like, we don't need to have a big, huge party room in each of our home, or we don't each need to have a guest room in our home, because we have those in the common room. And the common room has been used for, as I said, parties, all kinds of different classes, yoga. I taught art classes there, homeschooling, you know, community groups have met there. So that's been a great resource.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you for painting a picture for us. I'm curious. I mean, you raised your children here. What did you find the rewards of choosing to live this way were for you and your family?
Yeah, where do I start? You know, when I was growing up, I wasn't close to my aunts and uncles. I mean, I wasn't close geographically. But I loved my aunts and uncles. You know, to have adults in your life who really care for you and know you, you know, not because it's their job, I think that is huge for kids. And I think, you know, my kids, you know, approach Terra Firma like these are their family too. You know, like when they, you know, they're all in their 30s now. But one daughter is just living around the corner. One daughter is temporarily living with us while she's gone back to school. But, you know, when they, and our son lives in Guelph, but when they have been away and they come to visit, you know, they've often gone around and said hello to the other couples, you know, or at least look forward to the opportunity of seeing everyone. So, you know, it's a sense of comfort, you know, being part of the tribe, and we are tribal animals. And also, I think it's good for kids to see a number of different relationship and family models other than just their own parents. So I know that they're much more secure, adventurous, and principled because of having lived here.
Can you think of an example, like a way that you think you or one of your children are different because of living this way for more than 25 years?
You know, that's hard because it's hard to imagine not having lived here for the last 25 years.
You don't know that. It's just been
woven into the fabric of who I am. I think when you have a secure home base, whether that's just your a nuclear family or a larger like neighborhood home base, it frees up a lot of energy to live the rest of your life in a creative and adventurous way. And also, you know, our family at one point, something happened that put us into crisis, and, you know, immediately the wagons, what's the term?
The community
gathered around us, and the community was right there. And we all know that. We all know, because we've seen it happen to others as well. When someone is in need, people are there. And that, I'm sure you know this because of the nature of this podcast, but social connection is a better indicator of mental health, longevity, physical health, including things like heart disease, than things like diet, smoking, and exercise. It's huge.
Yeah, we need people.
We do.
Yeah.
And they drive us crazy.
Perfect segue, because that's my next question. I know there's been challenges, because there always are. Can you tell us about one or two challenges over the years, or maybe even just in the process of founding?
Well, you know, it's a given when you get a group of people together that you're all going to have slightly different priorities. You know, even if you sort of work together to create a common vision, you know, you have different personalities, different preferences, different budgets. And so you've got to have a way to work through that. You've got to have a way where people can speak and really be heard. And a process to make decisions that are respectful to everyone. And during our organizing period, we put a lot of time and energy into working out how we would make decisions, because really that's the foundation, right, on which everything else is built. And I think that's worked well. You know, sometimes I've heard grumbling, you know, but I think, oh, come on, you know, compared to any group, I think we've done really well. I think when the real challenge has come is when someone has chosen not to engage, you know, not to engage in the decision-making or to not engage in resolving conflict, to just to back away. And so the conflict remains unresolved. So that's, you know, in any group, that's going to be a challenge. You have to be willing to engage in that. You know, that, you know, I don't want to be too judgmental. You know, we all have different tolerances for different things, but it can take a lot of courage to keep stepping forward into, because conflict doesn't feel nice. And depending on our family background and our history, conflict can feel pretty scary. But But I think that's when the community really starts to form. Some people, so Signe and I, my wife and I, do 2-on-2 couple counseling. And, you know, some people have this attitude like, you know, they get through the honeymoon stage and then they start to have conflict. Like, that's the beginning of the end. And, you know, actually, that's the beginning of the beginning, right? That's when you really start to deepen. That's when you really start to deepen the relationship. Like, that's the mother lode. Not only your relationship, but you deepen yourself. Mm. You know, you grow your own maturity. But, you know, it's not, it can be pretty bumpy and it can not be easy. So, you know, I've tried to be understanding of people's levels, but I would say overall, there's an incredible willingness here for people to talk things through. And I'd say, you know, most things just seem to happen with no conflict. You know, we know each other well enough and we sort of know the drill. And I don't know, did that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, you know, I've mentioned one of the things I'm exploring with guests this season is the concept of rupture and repair, because it came up a lot in my own experience living in community. I think I heard it in some of the interviews I did in season one, that it's just a part of life. Like, as I like to say, humans are gonna human, there will be conflict, there will be disagreements. And so, yeah, I'm wondering, do you have any practices or advice for folks on what to do around that concept of repair? So something in the house that I lived in with 5 others was the concept of talking about it early. So when something starts to bug you, like, that's the moment to talk about it, not 6 months later when you're in a state of total, you know, frustration over an issue. So I'm curious, what would your advice be?
Yeah, those are good questions. Yeah, again, you know, a couple relationship is different from a relationship within a community, but there's a lot of crossover. And, you know, what we say to our couple is, successful couples aren't ones who don't have conflict, but they've learned the art and the skill of quick, effective repair. Now, that doesn't mean, I don't think it means, sometimes you need a cool down period. And that's something we teach too, like a timeout period, because when everybody's triggered, you know, you're no longer in your rational brain, you're in your limbic brain, and it's like fight or flight, and everybody's going to do things that aren't very skillful or productive. So, you know, take a breath, but then, yeah, you can't let it simmer. You need to talk about it. And, you know, that's a skill. And I think in our meetings, you know, with good facilitation, everybody has a chance to talk before we, and often we don't make a decision the very first time it comes up. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we do, but sometimes we'll hold it over to the next meeting so people can think about it. But, you know, when there's a real conflict that's happened and needs to be repaired, there's a number of communication styles that are being taught, you know, and they all sort of have sort of the basic underlying principles that you make a really, and it's a formal practice, you know, you make a clear separation between who's the speaker and who's the listener, and there's a really clear switching of roles, because usually we're trying to do both at once. You know, you're saying something to me, Valerie, I'm getting a little triggered, and I'm thinking, oh, Wait till I talk. And
what am I going to say next? Yeah.
Yeah. So you can't be in your head and listening to the other person at the same time. So that's a sort of slow practice. And you know, I could go into more detail about those, but, you know, there's nonviolent communication and compassionate listening and reflective listening. And, you know, they're all sort of brothers and sisters of the same basic principles.
Did the Terra Firma folks ever pick, you know, a shared style to study or use?
Well, as I said, just in terms of our decision-making process, yes. But in terms of, you know, repairing a conflict, no. we did, in some of our retreats, we sort of taught these practices. But then also there's been several times when, like, we have money for a mediator in the budget.
Okay.
So we actually have a whole sort of series of steps. You know, first try to talk it out with a person. You know, don't send an email to the whole group giving your perspective before that person's. So talk to the person. If that's not successful, you can each get sort of an ally to be with you while you talk about it. If that's not successful, there's people in the community who are identified as having these mediator skills, or we can hire someone from outside the community. But of course, if someone chooses not to engage, then yeah, none of these
no matter the skills or the most yeah. wonderful facilitator in the world cannot make that happen.
Luckily, that rarely happens.
Thanks for sharing, Steve. It's really helpful for folks, even just naming some of these communication styles. Folks can go out and sort of look stuff up. And I really value hearing that you've sort of given everyone the tools, but not sort of mandated a particular approach. And the idea of having a process of sort of escalation, if you will, sounds like really useful. I'm understanding that in addition to the folks that live in these units that are part of Terra Firma, you've had an impact on the community more broadly, sort of those that are geographically your neighbors. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that. How have community and connection that Terra Firma has created sort of radiated out into the community?
Okay, well, I'm going to start with the recent past and go backwards.
It's been a lot of years. That's understandable.
Because I just wanted to say, we just had our 25th anniversary, and at the end of June, we had a big street party. So we're about maybe 25 people. That's including so there's the condominium, and then there's a few households in the neighborhood that join us for our meals and social activities. So we're about 25. But at the street party, there was between 80 and 100 people.
Wow.
And it was just amazingly wonderful. We had several of the women in the neighborhood do line dancing. So they taught some line dances in the street. And my wife and I used to do folk dancing. So we taught an Israeli folk dance. And then we had a big potluck meal. And then we had games for the kids. We had someone set up a scavenger hunt, all throughout the neighborhood. And then one of the neighbors is a really good musician, so he was playing music. Oh, and another neighbor plays like world music with some friends. They do it live every week. And so they came and played some songs for us. And then that was followed by an open mic. And it was, I was sort of organizing the entertainment part, and I was thinking, ooh, you know, are we going to get anybody up there? And it was like, yes, we did. There's this lovely woman down the street, an older woman from Portugal. I think she lives alone. And she sang a beautiful song in Portuguese and then wanted to get up and sing again. And it just like, and the kids got up and did skits. And, you know, a neighbor that I didn't even know was musical at all played wonderful guitar, and his wife,
wow.
You know, a kid sang beautifully. So it was like, you know, community doesn't just happen. It needs to be teased out sometimes. And it was like all this big revelation of, I mean, this is talking about talent, but also just getting to know people that I didn't know very well. And then a couple of nights later, we have some neighbors across the street. They happen to be from Peru. They invited everybody into the backyard as it was getting dark. They had a big screen. And one of our neighbors did just a bang-up job taking photos of the anniversary. He's a really good portrait photographer, as it turns out. And he's, this is just an avocation of his. But we projected the photographs of the party. Everybody is clapping and cheering and eating popcorn. And I just thought, wow, this sort of feels like a little bit of heaven here to me. So that's just the neighborhood, you know. Like when we moved here, it was older families. There were hardly any kids. Our kids were pretty alone. You know, now that the street has gone through that natural evolution, and there's lots of young families, and our street is always full of kids playing. And, you know, that's not our doing, but I think we did add to that sense of community. Like we have, we've often had street parties for Canada Day. At Christmas time, we invite people into our common room to sing carols or whatever your religious, you know, tradition is. We'll sing songs. So that's the immediate neighborhood. But then the larger neighborhood, like Old Ottawa East, people from Terra Firma have been instrumental in an organization called Sustainable Living Old Ottawa East. And, you know, they got community gardens. They set up a children's garden. I mean, they didn't do it themselves, but they organized it and got financial support and permissions and everything. You know, and the children's garden is just great. You know, kids got activities and, you know, things the kids can grow. They were involved in the redesign of Main Street. Oh, and they were involved in setting up our local farmers market. And, you know, all those things, they're places where people get together, bump into each other, and start forming community.
Mm-hmm.
And so this didn't feel like much of a community when we moved in. And now everybody says, oh, this is such a great place to live.
I mean, seriously, I'm kind of thinking we need to figure out how to buy a house on your street. It sounds like a dream. Yeah, it sounds fantastic. I wanted to put this out there because it's obviously a bit of my thinking, which is that there are a lot of ways that people can have community in their life. And, you know, my whole thing with the podcast is that I want to sort of encourage people and inspire people to have what I call more us in their life, which is, you know, my word for a sense of community. I'm curious, in your take on things, do you wish more people live like this? Like, would you say, you know, obviously it doesn't have to look exactly the same, but do you feel like you've maybe unlocked something here in your community that others would or should, or you'd love to see them try to pursue?
I wouldn't should on anybody else, but
you don't seem like a shitter. As I said it, I was like, wrong word.
But no, I know what you're actually saying. I think, you know, for some people, the idea of community is like, why would I do that? You know, but I think for a lot of people, it's like this longing, you know, because we, you know, we were hunter-gatherers living in small groups for most of our existence as Homo sapiens. You know, this modern period is just a blink. And I think we're just sort of wired for that. And, you know, honestly, I'm the one who is the contact on the Canadian co-housing network site. And there's a steady stream of people asking if we have any space. And I have to say, sorry, you know, the people who lived here when we moved in 25 years ago are all still here. So, but anyway, we get a lot of visitors to just sort of come and see and be inspired and ask questions. And so I think, you know, we do, and we often get involved to speak or be on
podcasts or other media.
That's right. So I think we are playing that role in inspiring people, because, you know, if you've never seen it, it's hard to trust that it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you see it, then you think, maybe not exactly like Terra Firma, but you know, the possibilities, if you use your creativity, are endless in terms of how you build more community or live more cooperatively.
I absolutely agree with that. I keep finding little stories of different communities, and they may or may not have sort of any media on them. And, you know, they may or may not be on any websites, but there's a lot of examples of this out there.
And, you know, sometimes it's just as simple as we had a friend, unfortunately, she died this year, but she was amazing. And she lived in the Britannia area here in Ottawa. And she would organize potlucks for the neighbors. You know, it can be as simple as that.
Yeah.
Or a street party.
It's the step you're ready to take, right? And it's wonderful hearing all your examples. I just want to talk about one more, because I know it's a recent project of yours that you've been excited about. Can you tell us a little bit about the Old Ottawa East Art Tour and how that got started?
What happened was a friend was over visiting, a neighbor who's an artist. And, you know, it was in the middle of the pandemic. I think it was maybe the first year of the pandemic. And we said, well, geez, you know, our paintings are just sitting in piles in the corner. Why don't we show things in the backyard? And she said, well, from her experience, you know, the wind can pick it up and blow them away. So she suggested the front yard. So we got another mutual friend. And so the first year was just three of us. We called it the Old Ottawa East Mini Art Tour. and we all lived fairly close by. And people loved it. You know, that was at a time when there just wasn't much going on. And to have a little sense of adventure and normalcy and creativity and art, people loved it. But then the newspaper, the local newspaper, the Main Streeter, picked it up and ran with it. So last year, you know, they did the promo, and I did the map, but they're the ones who, you know, printed and distributed it and all that. Last year there were 17 artists and photographers. This year there'll be at least 17 or 18. So, you know, and again, you wouldn't know that there are artists in this neighborhood unless someone creates the opportunity. So the problem is that if you're sitting your own show, that means you can't go see the other exhibits. So we don't get to know each other. So last year I organized a Zoom call among those who had participated in the show, so we could just show, you know, several pieces of art and just talk about our work and about ourselves. So, because I thought, well, yeah, if we're going to form an artist community here, the artists sort of need to know each other too.
That sounds really lovely. I'm so glad you all got to spend time together. Is it happening again this year? What are the details of that?
Yeah, so it's the weekend after Labor Day.
Okay.
Sorry, I'd have to look at the dates for that. It's the Saturday.
Okay, Saturday after Labor Day. Folks can look that up.
Yeah, rain date Sunday.
Okay.
And you know, there'll be maps posted around. There'll be maps. If you can find one artist in the community, they'll have maps to give to.
To lead you to the others.
And I think there'll probably be maps. I'm not sure of the timing, but there might be maps in the Main Streeter magazine.
Well, Steve, thank you again for joining me today. Thank you for sharing stories from your extremely beautiful community-centered life. It's just been really lovely to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And I hope more people do, to answer your earlier question, I hope people do get inspired to find some way or other to build more community in their lives.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Life Without Us. I've been your host, Valerie Navarrete. I partner with people and organizations dedicated to social change, and I am an audacious believer in the centrality of us to that work. If you or someone you know is in need of a strategist, facilitator, speaker, or coach who centers community, I'd love to hear from you. Reminder to check the show notes for links to information shared in today's episode, to please share this podcast with the community lover in your life, and to come interact with me online.
You can get bonus content and sign up for my newsletter at lifewithoutuspod.com. And you can hang out with me on Instagram at lifewithoutuspod. I'll see you there.